All right. Tonight, we are stepping into Song of Solomon chapter 5, so you can grab your Bibles. If you don't have a Bible with you, under the chair, there's a bunch of them. Grab one of those. Page 473 of our Bibles is where we're stepping in. I just want to catch you up briefly if you missed last week or were not here for a couple of weeks previously. We've been traveling through the love relationship between a man and a woman. In this particular case, Solomon the king and this shepherdess, his bride-to-be that he's deeply in love with. As you probably know, if you've been around, Song of Songs is the title of this book because it is the song of all the songs that Solomon wrote. He wrote over 1,000 of them, and this one is the Song of Songs. As we traveled through last week, we came to the wedding itself. The procession came down, the two got married, and we saw the beginning of chapter 5 as the opening of this first night as they come together to consummate the marriage. And we ended with these verses in chapter 5, verse 1. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. And then the friends say, eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers. And there we are. So we are actually laying now in that beautiful place right after the first night, and the two lovers are there, and after a night of enjoying one another, she falls asleep. And in her sleep, she enters back into the world of dreams. We've been here once before, remember, where she had a dream just a few chapters ago, and she falls asleep again, and here in verse 2 of chapter 5, it says, I slept, but my heart was awake. And so we know immediately, just like we did previously, in the previous dream that she had, we know that she is now sleeping, and we're about to discover for sure that she's sleeping, because what's about to happen is some of the weirdest stuff on the planet. And so you're like, what is this? But when you recognize that it is a dream that she's having, you will quickly see why she is going through this. I slept, but my heart was awake, she said. Listen, my lover is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. My head is drenched with dew, my hair with the dampness of the night. I have taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? Okay, so just so you catch what's happening here, the two lovers enjoy their first evening together. She falls asleep in the bed, and as she sleeps, her heart is awake, and this dream begins. And in this dream, she suddenly hears knocking on the door. It's a banging on the door, and she's laying in her bed, and there's a banging, and suddenly she realizes the person banging on her door is her lover. And he's saying, excuse me, I want in, I want to get in. And he's shouting at her, and he's almost pushy, and she realizes that she's been laying in her bed all night long, because he says that I'm drenched in the dew of morning, which basically is a way of him saying, hello, I've been banging on the door all night. And have you ever been in a dream before where you're experiencing that moment where something's happening and you want to do something about it, but you feel like you can't do anything about it? You feel like something's been going on forever, but you can't seem to just go far enough to get it done. And so here she is, and she's anxiously waiting for her lover. He's banging on the door. She wants to open for him, but for some reason she hasn't opened for him, and she's still laying in her bed. And he's shouting, excuse me, the dew is on my head, and I'm out here. I've derobed. I'm ready to come inside. I've washed my feet. Do you really want me to leave and come back? And of course, she doesn't want that, but for some reason, she's still laying in her bed. She says, my lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. So this is where it's starting to get weird, okay? Because what's happening is here, imagine in this dream that she's having, we've just experienced this man who is gentle and kind and loving and yet strong and firm, but not in the sort of pushy break in the doorway, right? This is the guy that peeked through the lattice at the mom's house and said, come with me. I mean, this is, and now suddenly, he is standing naked in front of the door, banging, and he's thrusting his hand through the door. I mean, you start going, who is this guy, right? So there's a certain sense here of what is the dynamic going on here? Why is she suddenly so caught up in this whole thing? And then it says this, watch this. It says, I opened for my lover, but my lover had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. Do you catch how strange this is? Look at what's happening. Have you ever had a dream like this? Where you're laying in bed and something you deeply desire is right in front of you, but you can't quite reach it. And then when you finally get there, it's gone. And you're like, what? What do we call those kinds of dreams? It's a disappointment for sure. In this case, this is highly disappointing. But I would call it a beginning of a nightmare, all right? This is not a happy dream. And it hasn't been a happy dream for her so far. Do you sense the tension in this dream? She's laying in her bed. He's banging on the door. He's thrusting his hand through the door. She's not sure if she should open or shouldn't open. She wants him in, but does she? She doesn't know. What should she do? She finally opens the door because her heart soars and she goes, I want him in. Yes, it's time. And then she opens the door and no one's there. He's gone. He's left. So she says, I arose to open for my lover, and my hands dripped with myrrh, and my fingers with flowing myrrh. Now, this is again an illustration. Remember, myrrh is the spice of life and the spice that spices things up. So she says, this is often an illustration for that point where you are now completely drenched in love. And in this case, she says, my hands, as I reached for the door, they were dripping in myrrh, which is, again, a very strange picture as you think about it, because usually when you're describing myrrh, you're going to describe it in the lips or you're going to describe it in the face. But this is, she's saying, my hands were dripping with myrrh as I reached for the handle, in that my desire, laying in the bed for my lover as he was banging on the door, got to such a point that I jumped out of bed to open the door. My hands were literally dripping with the love that I wanted for my lover. And she says, I opened for my lover, but my lover had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. The watchman found me as they made their rounds in the city. So you with me so far? What's happening here? She's dreaming of her lover. He leaves. She opens the door. He's gone. She's standing in the door, and he's nowhere to be found. She does not say that she left the house to go and search for him like in the previous dream. Remember the last dream she had, who was involved in that dream? The watchman, remember that? She found the watchman and she was like, have you found my husband anywhere? It was in the middle of the night, and we know that a woman running around town in the middle of the night would have not been a good thing. In this case, she actually literally says, I stood at my door looking for my lover, and the watchman, they found me this time, which just makes the dream all the weirder, right? They beat me. They bruised me. They took away my cloak, those watchmen of the walls. So, just so you know, when you get to this part, it is a confirmation that she is dreaming, all right? Here's why. The watchmen were men in the city that were tasked by the king to walk around and watch the city by night so that nobody, no enemy could come into the city, or no person could spend time in the city taking what isn't theirs or creating havoc. They were basically the evening police force. And what this is suggesting is that the watchmen, those who are meant to keep them safe, the watchmen are the ones that are not keeping her safe, that are coming and are beating her. If this were a real event, I can guarantee you the next day there would be a few dead watchmen, all right? The watchmen are not going to do this to the new bride of the king. That is an insanity. Nobody would do that. As a matter of fact, it would be insane to even imagine the watchmen doing this at all, because remember, we are in the Jewish culture here, and in the Jewish culture, you had men that lived their lives by the laws of God, and they were the kinds of men, the best of the best, were picked to be the watchmen. And so this is, if you're reading this as a Jewish person, this is an absurdity. It is an absurdity that the watchman would come to your house nonetheless while you're standing in your door and your lover has left you, and they would beat you up and take your cloak. No, never going to happen. So what is going on here? This is the kind of dream that we have that is the nightmare scenario, right? She has this lover. She's just stepped in to his world. Who is he? He is the king. And who is she? She is a shepherdess, a nobody, a woman of no means. And he has taken her in. And as she sleeps the first night, all of her fears come to bear, right? She starts dreaming about the fact that maybe this lover of hers is not really hers at all. Maybe he just popped in and he's going to leave. And when he leaves, all of the protection, all of the safety, all of the wonder that she feels in his arms would be gone. In fact, so much so that even the very people that are designed to keep her safe become her enemy. Do you see that? She is dreaming that the safest people in town are actually against her and they are beating her up. It is saying, the only one that will protect me, the only one that will keep me safe has left now. And when he leaves, I am not even safe with the watchmen because they will beat me up and take my cloak. This is the kinds of things you dream up when your fears start speaking to your subconscious. They took my cloak, those watchmen of the walls. O daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my lover, what will you tell him? Tell him, I am faint with love. See how this dream unfolds? I mean, just think about it in a dream scenario, right? Laying in bed, lover tries to crash through the door. She opens the door, lover has disappeared. She's standing at the door, watchmen come, beat her to a pulp, take her coat. And then the very next section in the dream, O daughters of Jerusalem, I'm laying here beaten and bruised and my cloak is gone. If you find my lover, tell him I faint for him. What? I mean, it's all wrong, isn't it? Unless it's a dream and she is in the middle of that weird scenario where she's jumping back and forth between reality and dream, where she's fearing things and yet she's longing for things. It's all those human emotions tied together in this beautiful dream. And the author of this particular song ties her dream world into reality to add to the suspense and the wonder of love. And then he says this. Suddenly the friends who she just called out to tell him, I am faint with love. How is your beloved better than others, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you charge us so? So still in the dream here, the friends that she, the daughters of Jerusalem, that she charges to go and find her lover because she wants him back, they say to her, well, why would we run around and look for your lover? Why would you charge us to go and find him? This is almost part of that nightmare scenario. Your friends who are supposed to be there for you, you say, go find my lover. And they go, why would we do that? What makes him any better than anybody else? And now it forces her in her dream world to start describing what it is that she sees in him. So she lays in her bed at night, and in her dream, she starts describing this. My lover is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. This is a description physically of the color of the skin again and the manliness of his physical look, his stature among others. He is outstanding among 10,000. His head is purest gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. Now, these descriptions, again, are not just descriptions of a physical look, because obviously you walk through this, it's like reading about a statue, which in her dream is exactly what she is describing him as. A statue that somebody has made, and each part of the statue describes with such vivid wonder the vibrance and strength and power of this man that she has. The head of gold. Whenever you place the head of gold, the strength of the head of gold and the authority of the head of gold, look at this. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beads of spice, yielding perfume. This is, again, whenever you get into the beads of spice, you start talking about the beard. And in those days, a man's beard was a big part of the culture and a big part of what made him a man. When you became a man, you could grow a beard. And so she's saying, man, he is a man among men. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold set with crystallite. These arms are stacking out rods of gold. Again, you can imagine this gold head with these rods of gold. Crystallite was another word for rubies. It was basically the Hebrew ruby. So imagine gold arms filled with rubies, just gleaming in the light. His body is like polished ivory decorated with sapphires. So now we're into the white ivory with green sapphires. Do you see the picture yet? A head of gold with white jeweled eyes and black wavy hair, arms of gold with rubies, and a body of white ivory with sapphires in it. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as its cedars. Remember, we talked about the most choice wood was from Lebanon, and Lebanon was choice as a powerhouse. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my lover. This is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So she lays out this description in her dream to her friends of this man that she has tasked them to go and search for. Oh, let me tell you about him. He is everything I would dream up. He holds manhood in his very essence. He holds authority. He holds strength and power. And he is my protector and my great strong tower and my strength. He is my safe place. When he is not around, even the watchmen of the city, I am at their mercy. But when he is here, no one will touch me. No one will come to me. I love watching movies. The older movies that take us back into old England or into old Scotland, you know, things like Braveheart or Robin Hood, the new one that came out, or those kinds of movies, Rob Roy, these movies that take you back, because you often in these movies written into the script have these men and these women, marriage relationships, and there's always a scene where somebody talks to the wife while her husband is away, either at war or whatever, and then she says, when my husband gets home, you better pray I don't tell him what you just told me. Because when he gets home, man, let me tell you, he is going to come and he is going to honor me by taking you out. And I always love those moments in the movie where I'm like, I know every woman's heart should just be soaring then going, now that's a man, that's a man. I mean, I remember probably the movie that most describes to me manhood is The Last of the Mohicans. And I don't know if you've ever seen that, but if you remember Last of the Mohicans, there was a time where she gets captured and he's in the waterfall, right? And she's being taken and he's going to jump through the waterfall, right? And what does he say to her? That's right. I will find you. I will find you. And then there's that scene, right, where she's being dragged along in captivity, and what's he doing? He's running for days. I mean, I'm like, no human being can run that fast, that far. But he runs, and he swims, and he goes, and he gets to that place where he's like, oh, I am going to come and find her. And then he comes into that camp, and he surrenders himself to the camp and says, hey, I'm here for her. You know, you watch movies like that, and there's something deep inside of us that says, now there is a man, and there is a woman. And that woman knows that no matter what, her safe place is that man. He will honor her. He will protect her. He will fight for her. He will stand in the gap for her. He will be her honor. He will protect her from the watchmen of the night if he has to do that. And when he is absent, oh, that's a nightmare scenario, right? And so she describes to these friends, let me tell you something. This man is worth finding. He is worth finding because he is strength captured. He is my protection. And then she says these beautiful words at the end. This is my lover. This my friend. And she describes both the beautiful parts of the love relationship. The strength of friendship and the beauty of the love relationship between the two of them. And he says, and she says, "Oh, daughters of Jerusalem, go find this guy." Then they ask this question: "Where has your lover gone, most beautiful of women? Which way did your lover turn, that we may look for him with you?" Now, this is an interesting scenario. When you're studying Song of Solomon, it is difficult at times to figure out exactly when you change over from one point to another, because this is written in song and it is written in poetry. And whenever you read poetry or song, I used to do this when I was in high school. I used to work on analyzing poetry. It was one of my favorite things to do. And you've got your third degree metaphors and your fourth degree metaphors, and you've got all these different things going on. And if you don't understand each of them and you don't get into them, you start finding yourself in places where the poem doesn't make sense. But once you understand them, the poem unravels for you and you go, "Oh, the poem's about fill in the blank." And this is a song and a poem, remember that. And so the gaps between things are not intended to be specific and definite. But as you read it and you watch it unfold, if you imagine the scenario as it's unfolding, it begins to make sense to you. In chapter 5, verse 1, they find themselves in their first evening together as he comes into his garden. And their friends say to them, "Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers." She falls asleep. "I slept, but my heart was awake." And she dreams a nightmare scenario. At the end of the nightmare scenario, she's back where she started. My lover, my friend. It's almost as though the nightmare was part of her journey into the security of where she was finding herself. And then this almost seems as though the last moment of the friends in the dream bringing her into a conscious state so that she will remember that she is safe. Watch. "Where is your lover gone, most beautiful of women? Which way did your lover turn, that we may look for him with you? My lover has gone down to his garden, to the beds of spices, to browse in the gardens and to gather the lilies. I am my lover's and my lover is mine. He browses among the lilies." Now, this is a very interesting little piece because we are now back where we started in verse 1, where he says, "I have come into my garden and I have come and drunk deeply of the love of my wife." And now she says, as soon as the woman says, "Well, where did your lover go?" It's almost as though it's all coming back to her. And she goes, wait a second. He's in his garden. He's browsing among the lilies. He's hanging out with me. Have you ever been in a dream where you just start coming awake and you start realizing halfway in the dream that, "Oh, wait a second, I'm not on that crazy airplane flying through the war zone. I'm actually laying in my bed," right? And here she starts coming awake and going, "Where did my lover go? He's right here next to me." And he is enjoying the wonder of browsing in the lilies. In this time, gazelle, when they were in a place where they were in any kind of danger, they had to go in and they had to eat quickly. And you'll see this even if you look across here at our big animal farm next to us. You'll see the difference between deer that have no predators around them and deer that do. Deer that have no predators, they graze around among the things that are sweetest. They go to the water holes, and they go to the lilies, and they go to the flowers that come with the lilies, and they browse in them, and they eat of them at their leisure. It is a sense of calm and peace and no danger. But animals that live on the plains in Africa, the water holes are the death spot, right? So you don't get to browse among the lilies and chewing away on the nice little flowers. You have to eat whatever grass you can get a hold of in the shade, because that's where you are safe. And this was, in the ancient world, again, a way of saying, whenever he said, "He browses among the lilies, my lover is browsing in the garden and gathering the lilies," there is the sense of total calm and freedom. And she suddenly realizes again, we're just quietly laying in our bed. I'm not beat up by the watchman. My lover did not leave. He did not go anywhere. As a matter of fact, my lover is mine, and I am his. You see what the author of this song does? He uses this nightmare to show us the journey of her heart as a woman, going from the fears of being left alone, being unprotected, being vulnerable to the world, being deserted by the one she loves, brought back into the wonder of the fact that he's not going anywhere, that he is her strength, that he is her protection, and then finding herself in the peace and quiet of his bed going, oh, my lover is enjoying me because I am safe with him. And so ends this little section right before we jump into them being awake and him awakening next to her and starting to describe what he sees, which we'll get into next time. So what is happening here? In this one beautiful dream, in this one beautiful moment, we capture something that I think is absolutely critical to any strong relationship that will last a lifetime. If you are going to make it through life as a married couple, in the vibrance and wonder of marriage, you have to work diligently to become each other's safe place. You have to work through the fears and the insecurities and the nightmares that your spouse has about you, and you have to figure out what those things are, and you have to set them to rest for your spouse. Otherwise, they will live in a fear that will allow them not to be able to be completely free with you in order to give themselves fully to you. Husbands, you have to be the safe place for your wife. You have to fight for her. You have to honor her. You have to stand in the gap for her. She has to know that at the end of the day, you will give your life for her and you won't think twice about it. She has to know that at the end of the day, you will protect her from all dangers, including the dangers that come with your life. I find in the culture that we live in, men tend to have forgotten how to honor their wives, and they spend themselves protecting their businesses, their work environments, their coworkers, and their sports from their wife, instead of protecting their wife from those horrible things. And those things aren't horrible in of themselves, but they can become horrible when they become the competing activities to the heart of your wife. In our culture, we don't get to run around with swords fighting people and guns pulling them out like in the cowboy times, shooting everybody that makes an odd remark to our wife. Sometimes I wish we were back in those days because it was easier then to honor your wife because you just pulled a gun out and shot someone. But in today's culture, it's much more complicated. Much more complicated. Because the way we honor our wives are in the words we use and in the actions that we demonstrate with the things we want versus the things they need. If you become your wife's safe place, she will freely be able to give herself to you in every way, and she will honor you the way that she was honoring her husband in this dream. Ladies, you have to become your husband's safe place. You have to be the place that he knows when he comes out of that world that is trying to eat him alive and he comes home to you, that he's going to find a safe place where he can be himself and he will not be penalized for it. He will not be criticized for it. He will not be torn down for it. He will be honored. He needs to know that if you are talking to somebody else, dreaming up somebody else, if somebody woke you out of your sleep and asked you, tell me about your husband, that the first words out of your mouth would not be criticism, but that they would be honor. Ladies, we love hanging out with our friends, and we love talking about things with our friends, especially the things that bother us. It's what girls do. Guys don't tend to do that as much. It's just a reality. And for ladies, it is easy to get into those conversations where suddenly your husband is part of a group of husbands and you are saying things and talking about things that don't honor him and don't make him your safe place or don't make you his safe place. Folks, when we are one another's safe place, the ability to love, the ability to share, the ability to give becomes easy. When we are not one another's safe place, we find ourselves in the scenario of this dream, wondering when we are going to hear a bang on the door and experience our spouse in a way we don't really want to experience them or experience them gone. And we'll live in those insecurities and we will not be free to love. We must become each other's safe place. And that means the two of you, if you are married here, should start having gentle discussions with one another, saying, where is it that you feel I am not your safe place? Just be honest and be gentle when you're honest so that you remain my safe place. But tell me, where is it you feel like you wonder whether I am your safe place? And gently and carefully start having those discussions. And then spouses say, if that's where you don't feel safe, where you feel maybe you have a question mark, let me set it straight. I'm going to say one more thing tonight in this room because this is in our culture such a huge part of safe place, okay? When your heart is stolen by something else, you are no longer a safe place to your spouse. Men in particular, when your heart is stolen by your workplace, your sports games, by alcohol, or by pornography. I'm going to use those four because they are the most prevalent in our society. You are not your wife's safe place. Know that and accept it and deal with it and change it. You are not her safe place if your heart is captivated by one of those four things. It's fine to enjoy work and sports. Not the other two so much, but work and sports. And it's fine to be very, very careful with alcohol, but it's a dangerous fire, so be very careful with it. But it's not fine to find yourself abusing those things. If you are ever under the influence of anything, especially alcohol, you are not a safe place for anyone, especially your wife. And ladies, it's the same for you. Do not do those things. Ladies, you hearing me? If you are friends with a woman or friends with another man, oh, it's just a friendship. Oh, it's just a friendship. Women can tend to do that much more easily than men could. They buy into the idea that they're just friends with that man. You are not a safe place for your husband. Okay? You're just not. You guys, your friendship should be exclusively in your marriage. And ladies, you should have plenty of lady friends, but they should never become a safer place to you than your husband is. Just a different place. That's all. Just different. And so, I challenge you guys, do not create the reality of this nightmare. But let this nightmare be a challenge to you and I that we should work diligently to create a safe place for our spouse so that they can freely enjoy the friendship that we are to them and that they could freely enjoy the love relationship that we give to them. She discovered at the end of her dream that he was indeed her safe place. And that took the nightmare and wiped it off the table. Thank God for that. May it be true for us also as we walk into the relationships with our spouses. Let's pray.